Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing great today, too. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you all for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the message of the Christ, which came through Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, found in Matthew 5, verses 3 to 12. In this show, we will play a soundbite from Herb Fitch, Thunder of Silence Class 10A, to illuminate the deeper meaning of these spoken words. Listen as we explain why in Revelation, John suggests read, hear, and keep when it comes to spiritual matters, and why Herb tells us reading the menu in a restaurant will leave you hungry if that's as far as you go. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and live out from a higher consciousness. Swami, the title of today's show is Sermon on the Mount, Beatitudes Unboxed. What can you tell us about that title?
Yeah, we're going to go over Herb Fitch, where he does such a great job on explaining the esoteric meaning of the message of the Christ. We want to cultivate an understanding of the information instead of merely believing, thinking, or talking about them as a list of instructions that we're supposed to obey these rules that Jesus is laying out for us. And what I'm finding is that isn't how it plays out at all, that this is a deep message. And I really like the way that Herb Fitch broke it down for us. But I think before we start playing his instruction, why don't we just read the Beatitudes?
Okay, and I'll start. And again, these are from Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 to 12. And I'll read them. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
And this soundbite comes from Thunder of Silence, Class 10A, and you can get the full audio file from mysticalprinciples.com, and I'll play it.
But fortunately, the words were preserved, and though there may have been changes, alterations, the essence of that message is very vibrant today, waiting for all who can absorb it and are willing to pay the price of following it. It has been called the greatest message ever delivered to the human race, the Sermon on the Mount, and it does some very unusual things. It presents a completely new God. It erases all primitive notions about God. It also presents a completely new man. It erases all primitive notions about who man of earth is. It gives him an opportunity to stop stumbling, to stop paying a tithe to the ignorance of the world around him, and to find out that he is really a self-sufficient individual. Now, it may come as a shock to all of us to learn that although we have pretended even to ourselves that we understood the message of the man, that we could run right down those Beatitudes and say, well, of course I understand them. One day it comes to us and says, well, you understand them, but do you really? Are you living them? Was it just something you read one day, or did it change your life? Did it bring forth the immortal creature where the mortal once stood? What have you really done about those Beatitudes? One woman called the other day. She asks for help about her hands, and then she says, what can I also do to help myself while you're working on this? And I suggested she might work with the Lord's Prayer more carefully. And she said, well, then I'm on the right track because I say the Lord's Prayer every morning. Her emphasis was on, I say the Lord's Prayer every morning. I didn't bother at the moment to tell her that she could say it forever with no result whatsoever, because the saying of it, or the saying of the Beatitudes, is like reading the menu in a restaurant. You're still going to be hungry if that's as far as you go. Now, when I looked at these Beatitudes again, I was startled too, because I know that although I see what they mean, they are still not bone of my bone. They are not flesh of my flesh, and they must be. And then came an interesting illumination about them. And so I ask you now, what is it that you lack in this world? Make a list. Perhaps you're poor in health. Perhaps you're poor in finances. Perhaps you're poor in customers or clients or companionship. Perhaps you're poor in many things. In understanding, in justice, in friends, in possession. And you can begin to see that as you expand the various degrees of poverty you think you have, you may come up with a list of 50 different items, some material things, some emotional, some sociological, some economic, and there you'll say, there, I'm poor in all of these things. And along comes the master and says, that's right, according to your naked eyes, you are poor in all of these things. And if you want to spend 50 more lifetimes, you still will be poor in those things, or you will change your list to another list and be poor in 50 other things, if you keep going about it the way you have been going about it. And then he revealed the great new higher dimension. Nobody is poor in anything. We're only poor in the form, in the effect, in the images. What we're really poor in is one thing alone, the substance from which the images are formed. And being rich in that one substance, we have all of the effects we thought we lacked. We're no longer poor in health, we're rich in health. We're no longer poor in finances, we're rich in finances. We're no longer poor in the things of this world because they are added unto us. But we must first take the step of realizing that poverty is never in things. That is the illusion of poverty. If you are poor in spirit, you are poor in all things. And so he made that his first beatitude. The moment you realize that you are poor only in spirit, you're on the path. For at that moment you know that as soon as I attain even a measure of the substance called spirit, in that moment I am enriched, and the substance being my possession, it will now form itself as all the things that I have need of. And the moment we know then that we are only poor in spirit, that is the moment we are ready to be blessed.
I really like the way that he said in the very beginning here that it erases all primitive notions about God and also the primitive notions about man. And I have to admit that this isn't something that I picked up when I went to catechism class. And then also, what is it you lack in this world? And then he wants us to make a list. And then the idea that what we really lack is spiritual substance. We appear to be poor in the form, the effect, but we're really only poor in substance for which the images are formed. This is a whole different way of looking at this, for me anyway. And then the idea of being rich in this one substance, we are rich in all the things we thought we lacked. If we are poor in spirit, we are poor in all things.
Well, Swami, I really like that phrase, poor in spirit. To me, it just sounds really powerful.
Yeah, and as we go further into this, we'll really start to see what he means by poor in spirit. It really means we love spirit so much that we can't get enough of it. We have an insatiable longing for this substance.
Blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven because they have the substance of heaven. And this then was a revelation to an unheeding world that this is a universe of spirit. And deeper down would follow the knowledge that if spirit is the substance of the universe, spirit is my substance. And so at the very same moment he was revealing spiritual identity. Your identity as spirit, the identity of your neighbor as spirit, the identity of the universe as spirit, and the identity of God as spirit. And clearly, if all is spirit, then God is the only spirit, the only one, the only being. And now all in one fell swoop, he had shown us that there is one power in the universe, only one. And all of the powers of lack and limitation and disease, even death itself, were imaginary powers existent only because man did not yet know that he was lacking in the one spiritual selfhood that he did not recognize on the earth. Having it, having his spiritual self restored to his consciousness, having a spiritual consciousness, man discovers himself to be the immortal self, the one, without opposite, possessing all of the spiritual qualities of spirit. And then the Bible is alive. All that spirit hath is thine, because thou art my spirit. Did you say you were lacking in these 50 things? They are all included and embodied in my spiritual self. And then the journey has begun. Now we have this great strength of knowing that I have only one goal, the realization of my spiritual self. Having it, I have all. And as this begins, as this conviction deepens, as nothing in this universe can stop you from the attainment of that which you know is self, you're faced with the first problem. What am I going to do with this fellow, this man of flesh? And it tells you to mourn for him. It tells you that if you wish to be Christed, you must mourn for the man of flesh that you thought you were. It tells you to lay aside the garment of mortality. It tells you to realize that man of flesh never was even living. He is a dead corpse. It tells you to mourn for the dead corpse that you called your human self. It tells you to lay aside the dead concept, the dead belief, the dead idea. It tells you to lay aside all of the beliefs of the counterfeit human mind. Yes, we were interested in being enriched spiritually, but we can only do it when we will lay aside the material self. We are being told to impersonalize life, to take off the persona, the mask of mortality, and to permit ourselves to accept, not on blind faith anymore, but on the assurance of the master within, that there is a spiritual universe all around us in which perfection abounds without us. So have we been touched sufficiently to serve this inner spirit, or do we wish to continue in mammon, seeking the physical possessions of the world? This is where we determine the second beatitude and its position in our life. Are we ready to mourn, to lay aside the false dead self? Are we ready to begin anew another life as a child again? A new beginning, a new dimension, a grander vision of what life should be.
As Herb drills down with this, and he really opens it up for me, because the idea of mourning the loss of this finite mortal sense of self wasn't something that I intuitively understood that that's what Jesus was saying. But in the context of the message of the Christ, you really start to see this is instruction to do something, and it's instruction, as he said in the beginning, will erase all the primitive notions about God and man, a far-off God and a mortal man seeking redemption. It's a whole different way of perceiving it, but at the same time, he is revealing the truth of being, the truth that life is perfect, that there is but one perfect divine life, one spiritual life. But very few seem to have grasped this message.
And if we answer in the affirmative, then we begin the third beatitude. We are meek, not to our fellow man at all. We are meek to the Father within. We are meek unto the Spirit. We are moving now as pilgrims. We have learned that there is an infinite spirit, a transcendental spirit, which individualizes as the Father within. And if the outer man will make an adjustment to permit that vital contact with the inner man, this infinite transcendental spirit will function where we stand in our living experience. experience, and so we become receptive. We develop the listening ear. We seek the guidance of that Father within. We say, "Speak, Father, thy servant heareth. I am a servant of the Most High. I listen for my Father's voice, the shepherd within." And as the Father guides, we become the outer fingertips of the infinite. We only move as we are moved. The outer becomes the visible expression of the inner. The mind is no longer on the throne. The soul is guiding. The soul is teaching. The soul is becoming the power that furnishes all that is needed in this experience. So we are lifted through this meekness to the spirit into higher realizations of self.
We're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and 8 Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami Herb Fitch just was talking about the third beatitude, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. What are your thoughts about it?
He also talks about this in Realization of Oneness, Class 4A, and I have a little quote here I'll read. If you have not been able to attain the fruits of meditation, it is because you have violated the request of meekness, a certain kind of humility. It is really the humility of the acceptance that God is the only being present. End of quote. Yeah, and as you start to unbox what this sermon is really all about, it's letting us know that there is but one life, and it is everywhere, perfect, functioning right here and right now. But again, we must be conscious of it in order to activate it in our experiences. But we also are starting to see that we have to put off the old man. We can't accept mortality and then realize that we are immortal. We can't believe in matter and at the same time have an understanding that life is purely spiritual. So we have to understand ourselves in the way that we are created, which is spirit.
So I see we have the fourth beatitude, and that is, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Should we continue with the Herb Fitch soundbite?
And we come into that great area called righteousness. This is what we had hungered for and thirsted for. This was the pearl of great price for which we were willing to sell all that we possess. Righteousness, but not my righteousness, not self-righteousness, not the righteousness of this human mind and body, but the righteousness of the Father within. The righteousness which says, my thought, my guidance, my will in you is righteousness. And until you have opened yourself through meekness, through mourning, through the confession of spiritual poverty to my will in you, you do not rise to the level where you can be an outer expression of the infinite in all its glory. This righteousness is the righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees, of the scribes, of the church, of man whose breath is in his nostril. For it is not a human righteousness. It is divinity expressing itself, pouring itself forth from the deepest recesses of your own soul. It is infinite guidance appearing locally. And thus you are in the right use of all the faculties that you have. In this righteousness, we feel the power of God. We feel the power of the spirit. We can feel the doors open around us. We can feel invisible sunlight. We can hear invisible music, inaudible music. We can feel the power of the infinite. This righteousness is the beginning of the new dispensation. Instead of karmic law, instead of subservience to man, instead of subservience to the element, instead of subservience to all of the visible lacks and limitations of the world, we break the law of karma. But it is really broken for us. The opposites diminish, dissolve, disappear. There is no hate, there is only love. There is no lack, there is only fulfillment. There is no injustice, there is only the law of divine justice. Because righteousness is now the only power functioning in us. We have transcended the opposite. You can tell when this is happening in you, because it takes you into the next beatitude. You find you have the quality of mercy.
I really like what Herb's done here, is he's taken us out of the orthodox interpretation of rules for human conduct and behavior. And he's lifting us into the understanding of this process, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. And he's giving us some of the necessary strategies that are required of us in order for us to make this transformation.
And the reason you do is because as you look out with righteousness, the will of the Father in you governing you, you look past the form. You do not judge the effect, the images. You know now that forgiveness is not a human quality at all. Forgiveness is a divine self within, recognizing itself without everywhere. The divinity of your being looks out at your fellow neighbor and beholds the invisible Christ. That is your mercy. It is a recognition of the invisible self, the Son of God, everywhere. And so once more, we are blessed by this new higher vision. We are merciful and unknown to us. It was only through this ability to rise to the level of divine forgiveness that we too could be forgiven, that we too could be made white as snow. For now we are judging no man, and we are not judged by man. The mercy we are extending to the world is measured back unto us, because we have sent out only the good, and only the good can return. All the bread we cast upon the waters at this level is love. Nothing can return to you except love, for that is the law. And soon we find we have no enemies, we have no debtors, we have no antagonism. We are reaching that glorious place where the righteousness of the Father within, having purified us of the dross of human resentment, human antagonism, human judgment, we are in conscious union with the Father. We are in the unconditioned universe. We are free. We have found the real freedom. The freedom of spiritual consciousness, which we could never find in a body or in a mind. And now we are a free, transparent channel for the infinite. In this level of purity, we are the pure in heart. There is no personal self intervening. There is no glass darkly. There is no thinker. There is only the spirit expressing where you stand as your very being. This level, the pure at heart, is the Christ. This is the Christ consciousness. This is infinity, where you stand. Now we have discovered then in these six steps that Jesus was teaching the world that what they saw with a three-dimensional eye was not the creation of God. He was teaching them that all men on earth were in a state of cosmic hypnosis, accepting powers that did not exist, conditions that were unreal, living under a condition of karmic law, living under the belief of divine punishment, and in six steps he delineated the path that he himself had already followed, not his theory, but his tested, proven, dependable demonstration that if you begin with the realization that your only need is spirit, that all that exists is spirit, and if you consecrate your time and effort to the realization of spirit everywhere through putting off the old man, dedication to that spirit within, letting it dwell in you and you dwell in it until the moment of freedom from this cosmic mind, you would then be lifted to the place where the eye of you would lift all men unto you, where you could unsee that which human eyes declare, where you would become a witness of the Most High. And then finally the Christing, the initiation, the opening of the kingdom of heaven on earth to you.
I'm just going to let Herb run with this because this is really great stuff, and we can talk about it if we have time. Otherwise, maybe we'll just do another show on it.
And still we're a bit short of the mark. We're untested. We have to still go through that testing period. And so he tells us, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. And here is where you discover if this is for you or not. Judas couldn't make it. The acid test was too much for him. But when you have the ability to look at the persecutions of the world around you, the horrors, the corruption, the evil, and all that seems to be beyond the control of man, when you can also look at the subtle persuasions within yourself, those little invisible persecutors of your own mind, and can face all this with the knowledge that you cannot be moved from spiritual identity, which is the realization of omnipresent perfection, and that every problem that presents itself to you is nothing more than the acid test of your conviction, then you will know that you have touched the higher country. You will know it was necessary, too, because the word in you must be sealed. You must pass through that acid test. In fact, he goes a step further. He says, rejoice. Rejoice when you are persecuted. Why? Because so persecuted they the prophets before you. That's how these men came into their highest state. Every persecution, every lack, every limitation, every form of adversity, however severe it appears to the naked eye, is cementing home for you, if you are ready, the realization that in the spiritual universe, these persecutions are pure mirage. If they're real to you, then you've got to go back, step number 1, 2, 3, and 4, and find out where there was a flaw in your understanding. When you follow them carefully, when you come to the sixth step, the sixth beatitude, pure in heart, you should be a perfect transparency, so that even the major catastrophes of this world are quickly seen for what they really are. Peace has no opposite. Love has no opposite. Eternality has no opposite. Immortality has no opposite. Abundance has no opposite. Every opposite, anything unlike God, is but a shadow of thought, and you need not remove that condition. You must simply come over that shadow of thought. Now, these Beatitudes represent the almost total message of Christ on earth. The rest of the Sermon on the Mount is a delineation of the meaning of these 6, 7, 8 cardinal points.
We're going to skip ahead a little bit here because we're running a little low on time.
Now, we who have not found this area of grace are not practicing the message of Christ. Actually, Christianity has not been taught on this earth for some 1,600, 1,700 years. You see, Christianity, in its real essence, before it was organized, was a teaching about grace and truth. It was simply a higher order of life that originated inside Judaism, then came out of Judaism, finally was organized and called Christianity, at which point a very unusual thing happened. All that remained was the name. The teaching of grace and truth was thrown right out the window. The men who organized it had no knowledge of what it meant, and so they immediately put religion right back into old-fashioned Judaism and taught about a God of punishment. They took the old Judaic non-God and made it God. Grace was lost. Truth was lost. The words remained, but there was nobody to teach them or practice them. And as you come up to the 20th century, you find that for 1,700 years, the Beatitudes have been merely black print in a little book called the Bible. And people do what this woman told me they do. I said them this morning. I used to say them too. To do them, to live them, to be them. And then you see that poor in spirit branches out into 7 more meanings. Once you have caught the idea that unless Spirit flows through you, you're a branch cut off, you realize there is no place where you can stop that flow. The moment you stop it, you stop consciousness from being your God. There must be infinity flowing at all times, and so we are constantly poor in spirit. That is our greatest wealth, the ability to stay poor in spirit.
We can only do this in spiritual identity, where like attracts like, by resting in the perfection of divine truth.
Well, we're going to start breaking down our show for the day, so listeners, be sure to visit the website, www.ipdtransform.com. When you're on the homepage, you hit the Fading Banner Blog Talk Radio, click it, directs you to its catalog page, click the Products tab, and online classes directs you to all the classes that Swami has available. Any final thoughts about today's program, Swami?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join the Kri Yoga Spiritual Advance, get the light in your soul, and live from a higher consciousness. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. I'm Lisa Winton with Mukenny Toy signing off. Have a wonderful Kyoga Kana day. Namaste.